By all means, let's be open-minded, but not so open-minded that our brains drop out. Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Same Old Wombles. I get it, I have listened, but 3 wins out of 12, not good enough, is it? Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us responsible for bringing you Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated, non-partisan, and on World Mental Health Day, we are the Same Old Wombles. My name is Mark Lewis, and according to the Office of National Statistics in the annual review, Mark apparently is the 207th most popular boy's name in 2022. Only 241 boys were born last year with the name of Mark. And tonight's panel includes Adam Proctor, who has the 44th most popular boy's name, 1,367 of you last year, Matthew Cooper, 123rd most popular boy's name in Britain last year, 472 of you. Appearing from not the Tory party conference, because funnily enough, he didn't get an invite for that one, with the 514th most popular boy's name in Britain last year, there were only 76 Niles. Welcome to Niall Cooper, and welcome to tonight's special star guest, Mr. George Jones, aka the Ball Boy Don, former AFC Women and Club Shop volunteer, current AFC Women's press office, I believe, which George can talk about in much more detail. And of course, having a great name like George, he has the third most popular boy's name in the whole of 2021, 4,141 Georges born last year. Tonight, we're going to discuss.
You're still special, George.
Certainly discussing that one. We'll also discuss how soon is now. We do need to get better and quickly. The JJ online interview this afternoon, was it a misguided attempt to curry favour with the fans? Don't trust board elections. A contested election is vital for a constructive debate. And as usual, we'll have some constructive debate. And the AFC Wimbledon women. A Wimbledon team winning games. Fancy that. And of course, just for Adam's benefit, some numbers to fox you all. It's the Same Old Wombles. Welcome to episode 8.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Very good, Mark. Very good. Very well done. And I'd just like to say at this moment, in a break with tradition, George, you're hired.
Oh, that makes a nice change. It's nice to feel valued for once on one of these podcasts.
We love George. George and I spent a lot of time together through lockdown and in and out of lockdown. In fact, we were together when Boris announced lockdown again, Christmas 2019, I think.
2020, wasn't it?
We don't really go there, Mark.
Yeah, you know, it's
whatever,
sort of podcast,
whatever you
Mark,
do,
I didn't think that was what we were doing.
Right, should we move on, Matt, quickly?
Moving on quickly. Dear, what a wise move that would be. Okay, so, chaps, 3-1 defeat away on Saturday. Here's the most depressing thing about that, I thought. I was watching the Sky update stuff with my daughter. And we were saying that whenever there's a late goal like that, just like at Bradford when we were 2-1 up, just like on Saturday, somehow you don't expect that late goal to be for us. So we almost expected the Bradford equaliser. And you kind of almost thought, you know what, if there's a late goal, it's not going to be a 2-2 equaliser for us. It's going to be them on the break, pulling together the third goal. And winning quite easily. So,
Mark,
it's not great.
Mark, you said somehow. Well, that's just ridiculous. Statistics says yes, of course it is. There's no somehow. There's no doubt about it. Last season, remember, had we the last 10 minutes not existed, we'd have been 37 points better off. We'd have been in the playoffs. The last 10 minutes, clearly, I take it back. All the work I've been doing on Fair Games, absolutely complete waste of time. What I should be doing is campaigning for 80-minute matches. 80-minute matches, Wimbledon will be like right up there. That's the solution. So I suggest if anybody wants to write into Fair Game or anything like that, or better, Don's Trust Motion, because that's obviously Don's Trust to blame for everything these days. Don's Trust Motion, right? Make it that we should all be campaigning 80-minute matches. That's the way forward. JJ will be a complete hero. That's the problem. It's a stupid thing, 90 minutes. Whoever invented the 90-minute matches, they're to blame. I blame the Don's Trust board. Clearly, we're responsible for 90-minute matches. It's our fault. It's like a lot of us.
No, don't you think, right? Though, that it also helps if the matches start 5 minutes later as well? Because I don't know, score. Actually, we want to cut off the first 5 minutes of each half and the last 10 minutes. Really get them down to 70-minute matches.
But that's my legitimate question. Do we still have a restarts coach, or whatever they call it? Is that,
no.
Do we still have that?
No.
So if you look at this, like, so the restarts obviously include the kickoff, half time, and yeah, I don't know about the end, but it was like we're rubbish at all those bits.
That's what we've done wrong. We didn't have an end coach.
Well, we've got the restarts coach. We have an end coach. We're stuffed. We need like 50 coaches. That's what we need.
I think you've touched on something important there, Adam, because last year Andy Parslow was brilliant, and we saw that in all the data that's come out about from last season. And he's gone to Swansea and done a very good job at Swansea. And we haven't replaced him. We haven't got in a dedicated set piece coach. Rob Tuvey's doing it at the moment, who's doing it alongside sort of just general coaching responsibilities. And it is kind of a step backwards, and we're seeing that. I mean, it was two goals from set pieces again on Saturday, and it's an area we're really struggling in, which, considering it was land of the Giants for our sort of back six on Saturday, is concerning.
Oh, this is great. George can come every week. He makes it sound like I know something about football. This is awesome.
George, I think that's really unfair.
Was it Andy who was with us until Christmas of last year? There was a Chelsea coach who was on secondment.
No, that was James Simmons, that was.
Yeah, and he was... It felt like when he went, that almost was the time. I mean, him and Palmer, when they went, that seemed to be the catalyst. We'd never replaced either of them.
Matt, yeah. are you saying Cosgrove wasn't a good replacement?
He's doing well in League One at the moment.
How's that possible?
You know what? There might be a small confidence issue going on at AFC Wimbledon. I don't know if anybody picked this up at all. Just a small thing I might mention. I've mentioned Nick Zanna for at least a while, so, you know, whatever.
At least 5 minutes. Yes, that's a recurring theme that Niall will come back to, needless to say. So here's an interesting thing, and I genuinely don't mean to send the podcast in a certain direction, but 4 out of 7 of the teams below us, there's only 7 teams below us, and that in itself is concerning. 4 out of 7 of those teams, including Crawley over the weekend, have now jettisoned managers and have moved on to whoever else. And apart from Keith Curl, they don't seem to have necessarily picked up anyone of any great note. Have they acted too soon? Should we have an itchy trigger finger? Or should we just tell all our lovely friends on social media to go Foxtrot?
I would probably go with Tango myself rather than Foxtrot. Maybe a waltz. I don't know. That could be the way forward. I think that's probably the solution. Foxtrot is quite difficult. Tango's quite hard, actually. Waltz, very easy. Maybe they should all go waltz. March.
This is disturbing. Disturbing how much Strictly you've been watching. I want to defer to George. What do you reckon, mate? Because we've changed loads of managers. I mean, Ardley was in place for a long time, and I think he probably maybe outstayed his welcome by a few months. Okay, but since then it's been chop and change, chop and change. And we could carry on in this process for forever, you know. At some point we're going to have to stick. Also, it's going to cost us a bomb, isn't it, to get rid of all these managers?
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret. I was against the decision to get rid of Robbo earlier this year, but I think there's no point sticking with a course when you can see it's not working. And I think we're either at that point or very quickly approaching that point with JJ, in terms of he signed a large majority of our current squad. We're playing his shape consistently, and it's not working out. Now, there's going to be a variety of reasons for that. Yeah, he's been unlucky with injuries, but you can't, it's the definition of insanity to keep doing the same thing when his results are not coming. And the argument when people say, well, why didn't you say this, was Robbo is... Because with Robbo, you could see there would be a long-term development strategy. With that, it's our average age has increased by 2 years this summer compared to last season. So I do think we're at a stage where this season is results-driven rather than development-driven. And if results aren't coming, questions are going to have to be asked sooner or later. And I think Saturday could be nasty. Sutton are not on a good run of form. I know we'll come on to it later. But I get a feeling fans might not appreciate it. It's got a feeling like we're approaching that game towards the end of last season when the fans turned on Robbo in his last game.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of certainly agree. I mean, getting rid of the thing is, it's not an awful lot of people want the job, right? So the quality out there isn't great. So I think people need to be a little bit wary about what the next step, the next person, the next JJ would be. So that's a real harsh reality. And at our level, when you start paying off managers to get rid of them, then the amount you lose on a playing budget or playing salaries are actually really significant. So it's a rock and a hard place. I have seen a bit of improvement. I mean, like against Wolves, we actually had 14 shots, right? We didn't score enough goals. And we've been less doing less of the passing around the back, and we've been playing more direct. And I'm a big fan of more direct, right? As we all know. And that for me is a little bit of a sign. I still think there's just a huge confidence issue throughout the entire squad. We've got a load of young players that have got used to losing. And trying to change that is going to be really difficult. It's a crap one. I think if we actually were to get on a roll, then we'd do all right. But it's like stringing together those first two or three wins in a row is the hardest bit. If we can do that, I think we will be all right. But I'm just not sure if I can see us winning two or three games in a row at the moment.
No, and I think it's an interesting point you raised about the change in style and less sort of tick attack around the back and just being a bit more direct and being a bit faster on transitions. But for me, that coincides with the lack of Alex Pearce, i.e. from the 10th minute of Bradford onwards when Pearcey went off. So I'm interested to see if when Pearce comes back, whenever that is, whether we go back to that slower style of play or whether we can stick with this higher tempo style. Also, our last two games have been against two of the worst teams in the league. We can't get around that. Walsall are going to be bottom half. Colchester, I'd have money finishing on bottom four. So it's difficult to assist winning two games in a row, but it's going to be an interesting couple of games because our next couple of games are also against struggling teams.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like changing the manager, I just don't think that we should do that. I just think that's kind of, if we're suggesting the squad hasn't got the depth and the squad's been picked by him, how is a new person managing that team going to get much more out of the squad? You know, there are moments who seem to be doing some really interesting things. I just think it's probably working. Yeah, it's keeping that pace up, working on some of the other stuff. I just think changing the manager is not always the, you know, I just don't, unless you've got like loads of money to suddenly go into the January transfer window or whatever. Like, what's the point? I just don't, I mean, I know people are going to, if we don't beat Sutton, people are going to go mad, aren't they? Of course they are. But it isn't. It's not one person. There's a squad. There's coaches. There's a whole bunch of stuff. So I think there is some issues. Like Niall says, maybe it's confidence. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe they're trying to get their head around the type of gameplay. They don't. League Two is quite different. I think some of our players can't stand up to the challenges that obviously happen in League Two, and the refs obviously don't worry about those things so much. So we've got quite a young squad that's in quite a tough league. But why changing the manager? What is that actually going to achieve? You know, I can't see it doing anything other than more disruption. And some guy's going to come in and just start shouting at everyone to play better. Doesn't work, really. Not these days, anyway.
It's your knee-jerk reaction. But actually, one of the other points I put for this particular section was actually relating to formation. As in, George said it already, we've got a manager playing, it seems, a particular formation, and I looked at the 11 the start on Saturday and thought, what on earth's going on here? First of all, we've got six defenders playing, and even if we are playing 3-5-2, who's playing where and how on earth can we do it? There's a guy, I've sent a couple of links actually to our WhatsApp group. There's a Twitter account which I believe is the guy who actually runs the Alex, called Mick Dore, and his Twitter handle is 14 the Frog, which is a great thing. And he's a big Wimbledon fan, obviously goes to the games, home and away and everything else, and does a little blog about a number of different things. Wonderful description of one of our players for Saturday, which was no lack of effort, but at times had the look of a youngster who joined in with his big brother's mates, offered little protection by a poor referee. I mean, who could that possibly apply to? Any guesses?
Everyone in the squad.
Exactly. You know, we went 4-4-2 the last 15 minutes on Saturday, apparently. But it doesn't sound like Woodyard realistically is fit. And the interview he put out today looked quite almost woebegone. Like, he really wants to be out there, but he knows he's not match fit. So he's going to try and give it as much as he can because he's very wholehearted, but hadn't really achieved very much. And he was only out there, again, because we've got a couple more injuries. And maybe we're unlucky, maybe we're by default employing players who've got slightly debatable injury records. And as a result of that, they're breaking down quite easily. But, you've got Magoma and NYC, both of whom have never played men's football before, who understandably, even at League Two level, it's going to be quick for them. And playing week in, week out is going to be an impact on their bodies. So probably going to be the same with Ogundore, right wing back as well. He's played 3 or 4 games in quick succession.
What's annoying,
what's the
though,
deal
Mark?
With Harris and Marsh? What do we know how long they're out for? Because we've not heard anything.
Yeah, ask me tomorrow. I might know a bit more. Wednesday's the day I actually normally know a bit more. On Wednesday, I'll talk to I have a meeting with the comms team and I get a bit more insight about stuff. But George probably knows better than me, to be fair. We should be tapping George. George, what's going on?
I don't know yet, actually, to be fair, on Paris and Georgie Marsh, but they were a big miss, both of them. And we saw that Woody, who came in, you know, for that final 10 minutes, was very, very clearly a long way off being anywhere near match fit. I'd almost rather we didn't bring him on and just rest him, because the last thing you want to do is give him 20 minutes when he's not ready and then to lose him for another 2 months. So I was a bit surprised we did that, especially when the game was, you know, Woody's not going to win you a game when you're trailing. So he's just not that player who's going to create something. So it was surprising for him to come on. But I'll be fair. George Marsh ain't got a massive injury track record. Paris Magoma is his first year, so you're going to expect him to pick up knocks and niggles here and there. But it's one of those things where this year we just need a bit of luck on the injury front. And midfield somewhere, which somehow we'd escaped up till Saturday, and then they all came at once.
So it's depressing, George. I mean, I look at our midfield and you go Pell, Paris, Woody, Chislett. You know, that's actually not bad. That's an all right bunch of there. You know, and Jack Curry's doing all right. You know, there's talent in that team. It's just like, can we just have them all fit at the same time? But that's it. It's that little frustration. And if you look back over the last year, you know, there has been that kind of constant bad luck at the key moments, and it just means that, you know, we're just not getting that consistency. You know, if you look back at when Wimbledon have had their best seasons, you will go for it. It's a team that has not had any injuries at all year, and that's the reality a lot at this level. If you have any team that managed to go the whole season with no injuries, will finish in the playoffs or above. Right, that's just reality. We're not in there.
When you talk about injuries and all the things about the great Wimbledon teams, certainly when I've been watching and certainly in our time in the Football League, our years have come where we've done well is when we've got the squad depth and you've been able to rotate players regularly throughout the season so they don't have the build-up and the sort of injury through just burnout. And that's where we're perhaps going wrong this year, because we don't have that squad depth. And that means players like Paris have had to play every game, NYC played every game. It just means these young players are playing more minutes than they probably should be at this stage of their career.
Of course, when George says Football League, playing and watching in the Football League, he of course means the last 10 years or so, whereas, you know, he has no recollection and literally no living memory of playing three games a week through the night, end of the 1970s under Alan Batsford. Lucky man.
Whatever. Mark's just showing off, George. Just ignore him.
Oh, no. I don't have much memory either, George. I was about 4 years old, but, you know.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Senior played, didn't he? Our new signing. I mean, what was he like?
Yeah, Courtney Senior, he came on. He got some time at the end. He's a very good player. You know, from what I've heard about him from his time at Colchester, very good winger. You can see he's got a bit of pace. He's tricky. But he's an out-and-out winger, and I'm not sure where he fits in on the shape. I'm not sure if he's good enough defensively to play as a wing back, and I don't think he's a striker. So it's going to be interesting to see where he plays, unless we are looking at potentially changing shape. But I think he's going to be a very good signing for us. And if we were playing with wingers, I'd say it's an outstanding signing.
All right.
It's interesting because you think about Asu, and how good is Asu defensively?
Not good enough.
Not good. But then you argue, you say Paul Ossie maybe not good enough defensively to be a wing back either.
And that's when I then go into where the senior fit in, and we just play a winger and just play actually probably 3-5-2 doesn't involve meaning you have a wing back. You've got three people who are just hanging back, and we just go a bit more offensive. But then that's mean I'm almost getting into a conversation with George and Mark, who actually know a lot more about tactics than I ever do. I just kind of go, how come this ball's on the ground for some reason? I don't understand it. So that's, I should just shut up.
God, there's got to be something going wrong with some of the things I know and stuff about football tactics. Okay, there were a million different things that unfortunately are not right about being a Wimbledon fan right now. So I'm going to choose a totally different tack for my little rant of the week for this week, which is, and this kind of passed by very quickly because it got spoken about and then almost like decided upon really quickly, and I really don't know quite why. But for my rant of the week this week, I'd like to talk about early kickoffs this season in the lower league, League One, League Two. So understandably, as we all know, a lot of people around the country are going through some very tough times, lots of headlines relating to energy prices and energy costs, and whether there's anything the football clubs with lots of fixed costs can do about that, especially as we've just been discussing in terms of player budget and squad budget and overall operational cost. So to me, it seems like an absolute no-brainer in my wonderful naive way. If you've got an opportunity, when you've got a game that would be played in late November through the winter time, November, December, January, early February, that normally you'd kick off at 3 o'clock and the floodlights would already have to be on. And the team that was coming to that game from, I don't know, Wimbledon travelling up to Carlisle or Grimsby travelling down to Player Lane, wouldn't they already have travelled the night before anyway? And therefore, if you kick it off 2 hours earlier with pre-arrangements, a couple of months in advance, everyone's made the arrangements overall. I think Mansfield, I could be wrong, but I think it's Mansfield that have decided to do this, and they're the only team that have done it. And apparently it was raised at a Football League chairman's CEO's meeting a couple of weeks back and just smoothed over and completely ignored, and everybody said, oh, no, it's not a good idea at all. And I just don't understand it. I'm sure there may be more science to it than I'm understanding or picking up on. But to me, it seems like an absolute no-brainer. Why on earth wouldn't you do it? I'm not talking about moving fixtures and fixture times around willy-nilly. They'll probably do that around the World Cup anyway, which we know about already, because there's at least one game that will clash with an England game. But actually, if there's an opportunity for a football club to save some costs by not putting stuff on and not actually arranging things in that regard, A, why wouldn't they ask the fans whether or not they'd actually think it's a good idea and give them enough notice to do it? And B, why wouldn't you just do it anyway? Because it seems like obvious common sense. Mr. Niall Cooper's got his hand up, so I'm sure he's got a sensible response to that.
I know, Mark. I've been speaking to, because obviously at Fair Game, we've been doing loads of stuff on cost of living crisis. So I've been speaking to loads of clubs actually about early kickoffs and the consequences of early kickoffs. On paper, it looks like a really obvious, simple solution. There is an issue about the way travel, because what you do is you basically bring in clubs that are slightly further away that would normally still be able to travel in the day, that then become having to stay overnight because they're just that little bit. The little bit earlier kickoff means they have to. So that comes into play. It's also about your added revenue at the ground. So you actually have more people coming in for a lunchtime event. So they actually get lunchtime revenue, and then they get evening after match revenue as well with a 3 o'clock kickoff. So that's how they get a lot of their corporate stuff. It's all set up like that. So that's how a lot of clubs are doing that. Now, where I think what should be allowed to happen is clubs should be able to be given the option. And at the moment, it's the fixed 3 o'clock. So actually being able to start having more clubs able to say, right, that we can do that, that's where I think we need to go. What I suspect will be more likely is that clubs lower down the pyramid, so outside of the EFL, are much more likely and should definitely be able to consider noon and 1 o'clock kickoffs, because the amount of away fans and normally the travelling, particularly when we get to National League North and South, the travelling's not so much of an issue. So that's where I think you should really look at it. The energy cost for a lower league club, a National League North or South club, is huge in terms of the proportion of their expenditure. So saving on floodlights, which is about £5,000, is a huge deal at that level. So that is the difference between a club surviving or not surviving. And that's the sort of level that you're looking at income costs of energy crisis. I'm going to yield to George. The wonderful Mr. George Jones has his hand up in the air. George.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was interesting you said that about £5,000 being sort of a floodlight cost, because that's the equivalent of about 250 tickets, give or take. So, and I'd imagine that a 1 o'clock kickoff would certainly, certainly in the Football League, you'd lose at least 250 ticket sales per game as a bare minimum, probably just in away fans for a lot of those fans, certainly League One and above. So it's in those levels, I can't see it being viable, but non-league, Conference Premier, maybe for certain games, but National League and South, I think it's a no-brainer. But in the Football League, I can't see it happening. And Mansfield are doing it for Walsall, I believe, which is a fairly local game. But I can't see it catching on beyond that. I think the bigger fixture disruption will be the World Cup, especially there's a potential, what is this, the David Grimsby home game, isn't it, in December, which is a potential England last 16 game. So I think we'll see more games moved for that rather than cross-saving for floodlights.
England versus Denmark or Wimbledon Grimsby. I mean, come on, George. There's no doubt. It's got to be Wimbledon Grimsby every time, hasn't it? Surely.
I'd say that was the case, Knight. Only word up fact that probably the club will show the England game as well. If we could give them both at the same time, we might make a few pennies.
We should put it on the big screen in the ground.
Could we get that projector installed in time to go on those flats behind the south stand?
Wouldn't it? I'd like that. So we can just like not actually imagine how enjoyable football would be if you didn't actually have to watch our game.
That's right. Just that have the England game on at the same time as the Grimsby game.
Yeah, perfect.
Put the Grimsby defence off. What concerns me is you boys think we're going to get to the quarterfinals, you know? So I'm actually going to be in Scotland the night that England play Wales, which is bizarre. Because they know that obviously everybody will be supporting Wales.
Oh, I'll give you a story on that, Mark. Let me give you a great story. When England beat Germany 5-1, I was in Scotland, right? It was very, very, very painful. And I tried to persuade Jen to drive me to England when it became obvious that we were going to we set off to get to England so I could get to an English pub. And because we were in the borders, it just took forever and we had to give up. It was a fucking nightmare. Sorry, I did swear then. And then came back the next day and I thought, I'm going to check all the papers to see what the reaction was. There was a nib. England beat Germany 5-1. That was it. Nothing. It was just...
So we've got documentary evidence now that Niall Cooper, who married a Scottish woman, is complaining about being in Scotland when a football game is on, you know?
I don't think that is just, you know, whatever.
If I hadn't been at his wedding, then I possibly, you know, not even necessarily believe that it had happened, but it did indeed. Right. We digress as normal. So moving on swiftly, the Donnchadh board elections are now up and running. I know George has been involved in it before. I don't know what George is involved in this year. Niall obviously is on the board. So we've mentioned this a couple of times on previous pods, but Niall put a sensible post out today and actually got some positive Facebook response for a change with regards to the number of people on the existing board standing down and thanking them all wholeheartedly, which is a really good thing to do. I thought that was a good shout there, Niall. But actually, is it a concern that there are that many people standing down? And like I said before, having a contested election, i.e. having more than six candidates stand, are we confident that's going to happen? And obviously, what would the consequences be if that didn't happen?
Right, I'll take this one and then I'll pass on to Adam, who's standing, by the way, obviously, remember. So, you know, if we do definitely need to have a contested election, one thing I indicated in that post was burnout and the amount of hard work that Donnchadh board members do put in. And we are all massively dedicated to the cause. I think the one thing that we need to work on much more is bringing more fans in to help. And I think that element of actually getting proper groups of people to help and support is probably one of our biggest weaknesses, because it's really tough, you know, and the amount of flack and abuse we get endlessly on social media, it is undoubtedly the reason why we're losing the amount of board members that we are. So, and they are people that have been there for a very long time and have done amazing things. I mean, every single one of the ones that's standing down, I could give you a long list of their achievements and what they've tried to do and the amount of effort they've gone. And I can tell you that all of them would, if you pull them to the side on Saturday at Sutton, will mention social media as being one of the reasons why they're not particularly keen to re-stand. I mean, there are other reasons. Everyone's got slightly other reasons, but that is it. You know, you've got people that are just burnt out, that are really struggling. And it's because we're trying really hard and we've got to get move away from this culture that we seem to be developing of blame and shouting without actually offering to help and make a difference and stand up and say, right, what will you do? How will you actually improve? It's our club. That's what's so unique about us being fans owned, is that we need to get into a culture of standing up and helping and doing rather than lambasting, because lambasting isn't going to lead us anywhere. It's just going to actually weaken and demoralize those people who are putting the hard hours in. And it's tough. Do you know, I mean, over the last year, I've taken quite a lot of flack on social media, and I've certainly thought about whether I should do what Graham did and stand down a year early. Definitely crossed my mind. I'm sure there's a number of people that out there, unfortunately, that will probably be going, oh God, we're that close to getting rid of Niall. All I've got to do is put a few more negative posts out there and he's gone. And that's probably the truth. And it's a sad state of affairs that you've got certain people that are described as keyboard warriors that are effectively helping kill some really good, some really good momentum and good stuff that's happening. We're close to a huge governance change. We've got a new MD. We've covered that £11 million hole. You know, we've got fantastic stuff around the ground. We've got great new fan zone. A lot of this stuff is all stuff that's ideas and suggestions that have come from the DTB. And, you know, we're never going to get credit for any of that. And it's hard. It's really hard. Adam, definitely stand.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because I think that's the problem. You know, like, and I saw Doob stand down the other day, I saw it on Twitter, because as I've said to you all before, I've come off everything on Facebook. Just makes me so angry. And, you know, there was Doob standing down. Everyone was going, oh, mate, it's a real shame that you're standing down. And then someone put in a comment saying, oh, well, I can't imagine what a nightmare it is working with people like Chris. It's just like, come on. It's just, and that all of that sort of stuff. So there's like sniping all the time. And I think we've said before that we kind of over-egg it, the amount of anti-fan ownership stuff there is. But if you're a DTB board member, part of what you're doing is engaging people, and you're engaging people on social media. So you have to be part of that process and do listen to that stick. But I'm really excited because I think we've got four new board members right here on this podcast, which is brilliant, because Mark, you were going to stand as well. George, you're definitely standing. I've nominated all of you. So that's it. Basically, this podcast is going to be just like the DTB podcast. I'm really excited.
Same old DTB.
I was on mute when I said that. Sorry. Adam's the only one who said he's publicly standing. Unless George is just grinning because he's already written his manifesto and he hasn't told anyone yet.
No, I'm on the ESG, so I'm not standing this year.
Okay.
I've dodged that bullet.
What does the ESG involve, George?
So it's the election steering group. So basically it's in charge of setting the rules and running the election itself. Helping organise hustings with select groups and all of that, and making sure it's fair, impartial, and, you know, as smoothly as it could possibly be considering the circumstances.
So you're the Facebook police, basically, then?
That's one way of putting it. Hopefully it'll be a bit quieter this year. We don't want any issues this year.
I can't imagine it'll be as, or whatever. Adam, it'd be lovely. You're not on Facebook, so you're fine.
Yeah. No, I'm not on Facebook or Twitter, and I get you guys to tell me if anyone says anything. But I'm just, because I'm going to live up to my woke position, I'm going to read an opening sentence from a Guardian article that related to the really sad suicide of a teenager And this is the Children's Commissioner for England has accused social media companies such as Facebook and Snapchat of losing control of the content on their platform, telling them that recent teen suicides should be a moment of reflection for the way they operate. I mean, if it's ridiculous. That's another level. But the fact that we can't even have people who are really excited and interested in looking after a football club that serves its community, and they are allowed to be abused on social media for whatever reasons, who knows why, because they stand for something different, whatever. But as we've all said on this at various points and at various times, diversity allows us to really do some interesting things. And, you know, I wasn't going to stand because I thought, well, I don't want to get engaged in all that social media stuff. I don't want to read stuff on there. But I do want to be obviously engaged with fans, and I wonder whether there's other methods. But I am standing because I want to continue in the same way that I thought about before, to get people to understand that the unique selling point of our club is fan-owned, and that it's a different model to the rest of English football, and that model could be exciting, interesting, and extends beyond the boundaries of a Saturday afternoon. I want, as I've said before, I want the Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock to be as exciting as possible, but within the confines of running a sensible, exciting, interesting, and engaging community club. So that's why I'm standing. I'm probably insanely mad, but I know I'm probably getting not many votes again, but whatever. I might as well go for it.
Yeah, and just to touch on what you said there, Adam, it's so important because this year, the election, you'll probably be a hotly contested election. You're going to have a wide range of views, some people on different sides of multiple issues that we've seen come up on social media. But it's so important that that's everyone's treated with respect, whether you agree or disagree with what everyone says. You treat them with respect, you treat them with dignity, and whether you agree or disagree, you keep it, just make it as respectful and peaceful as we can, because whatever you think about the ownership model or how you want the club to progress, we all want what's best for the club. So let's agree, let's make this a sort of a genuine election where everyone can speak what they mind, agree or disagree, but keep it respectful, because otherwise we all lose. We don't want to turn into a shouting match, because then we all know what happens there.
Oh, yeah, 100% agree, George. I know that you've been involved with this in the past, but is there a plan to do some kind of hustings, some kind of question time type thing for the different candidates?
Yeah, so this is me just speaking as myself, not on behalf of the ESG or anything else, but there'll be hustings. I'm 99% certain we'll be doing some form of hustings this year, probably in a similar vein to what it was last year, but it'll be, like I said, that's just me expecting what other people are going to do, and there'll be sort of comms on that in due course.
Of course, we can have selected people on here, Mark.
Yeah, well, we can't ask Adam to interview himself, you know.
We could Adam be on mute, and then we can just kind of like, I don't know. I'm sure there's rules about Don's Trust board member also cross-questioning people. I'd love to open up my old journalistic traits and completely and utterly tear people to shreds. I'd love to be able to do that, but I'm just not sure if I'm allowed to.
Says the man who used to work for the Independent, you know, so.
Yeah, what do I know about tearing people to shreds? I suppose that's far too liberal, isn't it?
Absolutely. The issue you've got is that if there's disaffection on the pitch, and George is right, you know, if things go pear-shaped against Sutton on the pitch on Saturday, then, you know, it's not necessarily going to be big or clever off it either. But actually, I guess the biggest question, there's lots of questions around the Don's Trust, but the biggest question may well be, which I'm sure we can't answer in a very short, pithy statement, but biggest question surely is, does the average fan of AFC Wimbledon actually understand what the Don's Trust is and what they stand for?
Of course they do. There you go.
I think it's tricky, because I think the feeling is that if the results go against us, everyone turns to the DTB board, and the truth is that the DTB are an oversight. And yes, the buck does ultimately stop there, but you know, a lot of responsibilities are passed on to the various different subgroups. So they get on and do it. And has to be an element of trust there. So that's really important.
Just to add to what Matt says, I mean, that is the key point. And we look throughout this podcast, it's clearly obvious that I would be an appalling manager of AFC Wimbledon, because I would not understand the idea of this tippy-tappy passing malarkey. I'd just be hoofing it and hire two very big blokes up front, right? That's where I would go. I am not, my role is not to advise about football. So I'm not even there. I'm not going to talk about that. The bit that I know is the bits I'm kind of trying to do, which is trying to encourage people to get involved in the club and to do stuff about engaging and kind of grow the community and the amount of people that want to follow AFC Women because of our USP. That's what I'm about. I'm about trying to make us a long-term financially sustainable club that is embedded within the community and that will be there forevermore. That's kind of where I'm at. So that's what we're about. That's what the board is about. We're supposed to be oversight. We're supposed to be doing stuff. You know, it would be ridiculous for any of these elected fans people, because we're not experienced, to be able to dictate on football matters. You know, that's what we hire people to do. Any business would like go out there and search for the best people to do those best roles. Where we're lucky is that we've got a massive fan base and we should be tapping into that on all those different levels. Certainly that's how we always began. You know, we wanted to find a stadium developer, and there was a stadium developer amongst our fan base. You know, it's that sort of stuff that is out there. That is a financial resource. It was mentioned on social media today. That is something that we should really use, because that's what separates us from any other club. How many clubs would have the amount of volunteers, the amount of people willing to put the hours in, if we weren't fan owned? Do you know, where would I be if we weren't fan owned? Would I really be putting loads of weight into all this to back up what Sam and Man's dream is? I'm not sure if I would.
No, I know we've got to kind of move on, but I think that's such an important point. It's such an important point. If we weren't fan owned, there's so much I just wouldn't do in any capacity. And I don't even do anything, actually. So then you think about the people that actually do stuff. I know people hop back and say, well, you know, we remember when we got absolutely burnt by the move thing, right? But that summer, I was never going to watch football again on a Saturday. That was it. And it all changed overnight. And and that journey that I've been on, you know, since then, is because of the fans. And that makes it really special in lots of different ways. And that's why, you know, my daughter loves it. That's why my dad loves it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's so easy. And we could lose that. We could lose all of that in the same way overnight. And we don't want it. So again, goes back to why I want to stand, to say this is the kind of things that are important, why they're important, how we kind of bring things together. I don't know how we'd run without the volunteers we have. The volunteers are fantastic, amazing. We need to continue to build that, reward them, grow the numbers of volunteers in different spaces, as we've already discussed previously, and just kind of move towards that extended model of a cooperative and those kind of things. But we need to keep moving, and we're new. You know, like I said previously, the new stadium, all those kind of things, there's lots of things to work out, but it doesn't mean we throw everything driving out overnight, because we've got something fantastic.
Adam, in recent weeks, I mean, I'm loving the fact that you're using your manifesto each time. You're doing well. It's doing a good job. And George, just so you understand, you know, we take in all sorts of opinions here. That's the great thing about the Same Old Wombles. Our opinions are, should we be fan-owned or really fan-owned? Those are the kind of two levels that we like to work between, to be honest with you. That's right.
We're obviously getting somewhere, though, because we got name-checked on the one of the other pods, twice, in fact. I got named. I'm not sure whether me being named is good or whether that means I'm going to go swimming with the fishes, but, you know.
For being open-minded?
No, it was about the fact that Danny Macklin should listen to all the different pods to get different opinions and different views, which is fair enough.
No, yeah,
you should listen to us anyway.
Anyway, moving on, after Professor Adam has spoken so well, it's high time, because we've heard from him already, and this will mean that we can hear a lot more from George rather than from anyone else. It's high time to bring in, for the last part of tonight's programme, young Mr. George Jones, who I believe from the beginning of this season has taken the wisest move possible to actually be involved with a Wimbledon team that wins games on a consistent basis. So, George Jones, I believe your official title is press officer of AFC Wimbledon women's team?
Yes, media officer was what it started as, and then I joined, was it October last year? So I've been in place for a little over a year now. It's volunteering, but I'm loving every minute of it.
And why get involved with them, apart from the fact that it was obviously a wise move to abandon the men's team at that point?
I just want, it's such a rewarding thing being involved with the women's team, seeing the growth in women's sport over the last couple of years has been absolutely incredible. And seeing the women's team and seeing, you know, knowing the players, it's just so rewarding. And seeing the stories and the journeys that they've all been on to get to where they are now, it's inspirational. So it really is something that we should be proud of as a club, that we support them and help the women's team do whatever we can to help maximise the success that, you know, of hopefully getting us to, as high as we can up the women's football pyramid.
So obviously I follow you and Dave and a few other people who go to games regularly on social media. So I see a lot of different stuff that goes on, and obviously the Twitter updates are excellent. And they won again yesterday, 2-0, I believe.
Yeah, 2-0 away at Cambridge City yesterday. It was a good win for us. They were a very well-drilled side, Cambridge. You know, we knew what they would be of just, you know, they effectively played two banks of four, well, a bank of four and a bank of five, and said, break us down. And once we did, we were able to dominate the game. So it was professional is the word I'd use to describe the performance. But, you know, job done, and we keep going for that title before we start cup runs over the next couple of weeks.
How good is Ashley Hinks?
Ashley Hinks is ridiculous. There's no other word for it. You know, it's 40 goals in all competitions last year. It's going to be 50 if she carries on at this rate. She scored 9 goals in her last 4 games, I think it is. There's levels to it, and she's levels above anything else I've seen in men's or women's football. She is absolutely incredible.
You think she'd work well with a Sal?
She got the club player of the year, didn't she?
She got the club player of the year last year, which, you know, and there was a women's player, Rosie Russell, was, you know, the runner-up in that award, you know. So it shows how far we've come as the women's team. And, you know, Ashley Hinks is just, yeah, she'd do a job for the men's team. She'd, you know, if we need a striker this year, that's a battle for you, Niall. Let's see if we can get Ashley Hinks registered to play for the men's team.
I'm on it, George.
And where are we in the league, George? How far? Because I know that the start of the season wasn't that great. We took us a little while to get going.
Yeah, so the first game we drew with our title rivals 0-0 at home, which if you're playing your title rivals in the first game, you take a point. And then we played QPR in our second game, which didn't go our way. We were not our best that night and we lost 1-0, but we're unbeaten since then. We're still on track for contending for promotion. It is only one promotion spot, so it is a big ask at our level. But, you know, we're still on track for it. We're still going to keep going for it. And I think we'll be well in that mix come the end of the season.
So a lot of players, a lot of people obviously would have taken a little bit more closer attention to women's football since the success of the Euros in the summer. And they would know some of the names of the players. And obviously, most recently, England US was on national TV, free to air, which is great to see on Friday night. Some debatable defending, but, you know, entertaining game, I thought. Talk us through where Wimbledon are as, in terms of the levels and the pyramid there is. Obviously, there's a major gap, as far as I can see, between the players who are going for £300,000 or £400,000 being transferred from Chelsea to Barcelona, and then tier two, tier three, and so on of women's football in the UK.
Yeah, so Wimbledon, we're tier four, so it's the same level as the men. I think the women have a much better chance of getting out of tier four this year in the right direction. But it's one of those, so you've got the top of the level, you've got Super League, which is where you see those sort of the England players playing, where you're seeing transfer fees of £300,000 or £400,000, which, you know, they should be going for more than that if we're being brutally honest. It shows how far the women's game still has to go when the record fee is £300,000 and you look at men's fees and they're at £200 million. So you've got the Super League, then it's the Championship, where it's a lot of full-time clubs at that level. And then you've got Southern and Northern Premier, which is tier three. And then you've got us in tier four, which is regionalised to South East, South West, Midlands and North. And it's the women's football pyramid. This is all me speaking purely as a fan before I get anyone in trouble or get myself in trouble. But the women's football pyramid is one up in a lot of leagues. And the division above us, in fact, the winners of the Southern Premier and Northern Premier play each other in a playoff for one promotion spot. So it's, in my opinion, it should be two up in those leagues, just because of that's, you know, it makes sense. That's how football should work, because otherwise you're in a position where teams are effectively in a dead season come October. And it's a tough ask to get promoted in women's football. It really is, and it's why you've got a backlog of some big teams in the lower divisions.
Why is
just
that?
Having to bide their time.
That seems really wrong to me. Why is that? Why is it? Why is it? I mean, because I mean, part of the excitement is having that movement between the leagues. Certainly in our league, at least you're always going to get, you know, what, almost half the league sometimes changes. But with this, it's what does it? Why is that? Is that a money thing?
It's the FA, Matt.
Yeah, the women's football pyramid is run by the FA. You know, there's always conversation about changing it and, you know, whether there's ways to improve it and to improve financial distribution and all of those conversations. I mean, I must say credit to the FA. I think that's probably the first time in my life I've said that. But they've massively improved the prize money for the Women's FA Cup this year. So it is going to get better. But it's one of those things of, I think everyone in the women's game looks at it and thinks you need more promotion spots because otherwise it gets static and it protects the teams at the top and it encourages teams to go for mediocrity because if there's two down from a division and one up, if you're a mid-table team, you've got nothing to play for. Why invest in facilities? Why invest in players? Why invest in coaching or training facilities? Because you know it's not going to make a difference.
I mean, just to add on this, that there is a big review about to that started into the women's game that hopefully will address all of those issues, and that's actually really important to, you know, build on the success of the women's national team before we start making all the mistakes the men's league has done. So that's the real key. So I think there's a whole load of things that are in the mix. So it's quite a good opportunity for the women's game, and obviously there's a lot of potential in for it to develop. As both me and Matt's girls both play football, and you can see the amount of girls that are playing these days. You know, it's, you know, I think there's so much growth. And as a club, we need to be looking at doing more ourselves. I'll be honest, but we've talked about that a lot on the board, and it's really difficult because at the moment there aren't enough fans going, and we need to get more fans going and watching a team that bloody well wins for a start.
Is there not a thing? I mean, how difficult is it to do a double header?
So we did a double header this summer in the pre-season friendly where the men's and women's team both played Ipswich. And I don't think it's controversial to say logistically it was very difficult for everyone involved. Okay. And I have to say, I think to do it on a men's league game is probably bordering on impossible just because of the space, the changing facilities. You know, because it was a friendly, you were able to do the kickoffs only about half hour apart. For a league game, you'd probably need well over an hour at least, because all the rooms that we use for changing facilities are in operation on a men's match day. So a doubleheader would be very difficult. But attendances this year have been great. I mean, we had the postponement last weekend against Wigan, where we sold well over 1,000 tickets for that game. And that was going to be a massive crowd for us at Plough Lane. It was going to be a family fun day. It was going to be an absolutely incredible event. It's a shame that got postponed. But, you know, playing at Plough Lane and playing at men's team stadiums is the only way forward to see major growth, which is coming in the women's game. It's the only way to capitalise on that. I mean, we've got Fulham in a Capital Cup game that's being played at Craven Cottage. And if Fulham can play, you know, at a game to their main stadium, you know, when they're in the Premier League, you know, I think we should be playing. I know it's difficult and there's loads of arguments one way or the other, but I think playing at Plough Lane is the only way we're going to see any meaningful growth. And it's great to see. And the number of women's teams' games have been incredibly well supported. We've got loads of new fans coming to games. And all you have to do is come to one of our games and see the demographics there. It's so different to what you see at a men's game. And it's so important to get that growth because that feeds into the women's team. And then you can see them coming in. And I've seen some people who, the first time they come to Plough Lane was for a women's game. They're now coming to men's games because they've seen what we're about as a club. And that growth comes by getting different demographics in, and you need support to do that. So Plough Lane, and for all clubs, playing at their men's stadium is vital to the growth of the women's game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%. Go on, Adam.
I was going to say that, because I went to one game last season at Plough Lane. It was fantastic. And yeah, the demographic was really different. It was totally different. It was different in lots of good, positive ways. And how do we pressure the FA to make more promotion relegation spots? Because when you have, you know, you've got to have competitive leagues. That's what makes football exciting, whether you're going up or down. To have single promotion places just feels like it doesn't make it competitive. And if you want people to come throughout the season to more games, you've got to have those games have got to mean something throughout the entire season. And when you reduce the amount that can be promoted or relegated, then there is less meaning of certain types of games because you know you're not, you're already out, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I kind of, it feels like whatever needs to be done to get the FA to look at that and just add those extra spots. I don't know what the difficulty would be with adding those, but it seems like a no-brainer.
It should do, Adam, but you need to think who's running, who's the power brokers in all of this. So think about who's in the top flights, which clubs are now in the top flight of top two divisions of women's football. It's all the Premier League clubs, right? So they basically, there used to be a load of, I remember Doncaster Bells and people like that, you know, some of these old traditional Millwall Lionesses, some of these old traditional women's team names that you know about. And now it's all the Premier League clubs because they're basically buying up all this sort of stuff and they are creating a cartel at the top end of the game, which means the very last thing they want is relegation. It's very similar in threat to the European Super League, right? And it's the same sort of clubs with the same mentality owned by American owners who have like find this weird puzzling relegation thing, right? A complete oddity that they'd rather not have. And that's kind of the fear that we need to tackle when it comes to the women's game. And that's the drift that's going on. So you need to be really wary of the billionaires that run the Premier League clubs that are equally evident in the women's game as they are in the men's game, because they're the ones who are pulling all the strings. And that's why you need to have independent regulation and independent control about football's ecosystem and about football's financial flow to make sure it's competitive. And it gives opportunities to clubs like Wimbledon to get up the pyramid, because clearly, in my view, we're probably, you only have to look at the cup results to realise we're clearly good enough to survive and hold our own, more than hold our own in the league above, because we beat them all when we play them in the cup, right? So it's like the system's broken, but the only way to fix it is to take it away and get an independent view on how you do that. And that's quite a hard thing to do, but that's clearly where the problem lies.
I can't believe it took Niall 45, if not more, minutes to get onto independent regulators on the pod. But 100% correct, 100% correct. And you're right, George, it's a real shame that game that was scheduled, obviously, to be on the Sunday wasn't able to be played due to obviously, Her Majesty passing away. But is that going to be rescheduled as a Plough Lane game at some point?
So the game that we lost, it was last weekend, just gone, not before then. We did lose a game. Okay. And before then, but the game we lost to Wyndham was due to them not being able to field a team due to injuries and suspensions, which, you know, I'm not going to go into that. That's been rearranged for this coming Sunday. So hopefully it won't be at Plough Lane, I'm afraid. It will be at Carshalton because of pitch availability. But it's hopefully we'll go out there, we'll get the game play, and hopefully we'll still get a good crowd.
And there's a balance, obviously, on when Plough Lane's available, what it costs to open the stadium. Presumably we would ideally want to play every home game at Plough Lane, but it's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, we want to play every game there. That's the short answer on that. And, you know, when you're getting crowds of 1,500 people, it's, you know, it's very doable. I mean, the finances are one thing, but then you look into it and you think it's an investment. You look at it and it's an investment into women's football, into the growth of the club, men's and women's side, of getting different demographics in and, you know, all of that. And it's, you know, I mean, for me personally as a fan, it's a no-brainer. But it's one of those things of pitch availability. The men have got a lot of home games coming up. But you look at it and it's, I probably shouldn't say that, but it's a lot of things where we should be at Plough Lane every week, in my opinion.
Why we do things as a podcast, George, so we can express ourselves.
No, so one of the things I was going to ask, but it doesn't need an answer, because I saw like a YouTube short or whatever the other day, which was like, football rules that you don't know, and one of them was apparently that you can start a football game with 7 players. So can we not? We don't have to answer this. Could we not, in those instances, can you not force the other team to only field 7 players if that's allowed? Surely.
So last year when we had all of those COVID postponements over Christmas last year in both men's and women's games, our league sent out a clarification with that rule book saying 7 players is all you need to play a game. And if you've got 7 players available, you're expected to fill it. And our league's really interesting because they publish the squad lists, an active squad list for every weekend. So you can see players get added and removed as they move between clubs and whatever. And so it's one of those things where I'm surprised they called that off. They've had other games called off as well, so hopefully the game will go ahead this weekend.
Good news, good news. George, it's really great to have you on. Really appreciate you coming on and talking about positive things. And the fact we've got a centre-forward who knows where the goal is, yeah, maybe we can get her in. Obviously, she'll have a day job, but if there's somehow we can, you know, get her a day off or during the week from her normal 9-to-5 job to give the main strikers a bit more training as well as to where the goal is and actually get it between those white things, that could be quite useful, I think. Good stuff. Okay, gentlemen, we're going to finish off because we've been rattling on for a while with just a little game for George's benefit that we play every week, which is called Same Old Numbers. And it's just a few random numbers that we create. We don't create the numbers. We come up with the numbers. And essentially, I'm going to give you a number, each of you individually. And the number relates to something either AFC Wimbledon related or just generally football related. And you've got to find what the actual answer is.
And the way it works, George, is this is important, is that Mark just thinks of any old number and then works his way back to a fact that fits it. So that's how it works. No one gets it. No one understands how he's plucking things out of the air.
This is not true. Not true. All right. Just to prove that that's not true.
George, you're not allowed to say two from the top, three from the middle, one at the bottom. Because I tried that last week and it wasn't the answer.
Just quite right. Right. I think these are relatively straightforward, actually. At least two of them are. So for Adam, the number is 7,119.
Okay. Again, Marcus started with the idea that the answer is really simple. And then he asked me the question to make me look stupid. What was the number again?
7,119.
All the rest of us know, Adam. We all know. We all know. I know. George's knows. Matt's knows. All of our three listeners know, their dogs know, their aunties know, they all know, we all know. But all right, Adam,
I actually think I might know this one.
Come on, give us a guess.
Number of Don's Trust members.
That would be nice.
About 3,000 short, by the way, there.
Thank you. About our... Okay, is it attendance? Is it an attendance thing, figure?
Might be, yeah. Who's attendance?
Okay, our attendance last time we played Sutton?
Nope. Oh, I think Niall knows and George knows and Matt knows.
And all our aunties and our pets and our neighbours and most of the street. And in fact,
George, what's the answer?
Is it our average attendance from last season?
Throughout this season?
Oh, this season, yeah.
Very good. Well, you were almost there, Adam. Almost there. All right. Okay, one for 7, George.
7,000 people at King's Meadow was a bit of a squeeze, I must admit.
Absolutely. One for George. This has already been mentioned on the pod, so you should get this straight off the bat. George's number is 40.
Yeah, Ashley Hinks' goals from last year.
See? It's easy. It's easy, this quiz. Well done, George. Okay, for Niall.
Is that not the IQ, the average IQ of people on social media?
Not that high. Okay, for Niall, the number is 1,608. 1,608. I can't believe this number's this high, actually.
1,608?
Yeah.
Is it our highest amount of fans we took to an away match this season?
No, this was actually quite personal to you.
I think it's technically the amount of cups of tea they could serve at the concession at half time if they actually did their job. But
is it how many days I have to wait until I get a fresh orange juice at the ground?
No.
Is
fresh orange juice has got to be orange juice. Find out an orange juice track. That's going to be this week's theme for Adam.
1,600.
They were one-hit wonder, weren't they, orange juice for the 80s?
As if we'd know, whatever. 1,608.
George is foxed.
How many minutes since I last saw us win a game in my home seat?
That's that would take it. Any ideas, Matt?
No, I'm afraid I don't. What's the number again?
1,608.
Is it the amount of votes I've got? In the last time he stood, is it combined votes that Niall got? Is that it?
Yeah, for George's benefit, last week's was how many votes did Niall get in the last on Toss Board election, which even he didn't know. No, 1,608 is the number of Twitter follows that Niall did. Finally, for Mr. Matt Cooper, and Noam made a good point earlier on about numbers of fans we take to away games, which I think has been really strong, and there's a hell of a lot at Walsall considering the train strike. So that's a bit of a big clue about this one. And the number is 47.
Is that the lowest away attendance that us?
Yeah, but by who? It wasn't by us, but by who?
He's not allowed to mention that name.
Or is it in the league above?
It's in our league.
Oh, that's not fun.
Barrow. Would it be the last?
I think George knows. George looks like he knows.
Who is it then? Who's the least?
If I say Bitcoin, does that help?
Oh, Crawley.
Really?
47 Crawley fans at Grimsby last weekend.
Wow, that's because I have to pay in bitcoins to get their travel,
or pay off the manager in bitcoin.
Yeah, Mark. The answer to this is 16.
Oh, what's the question?
Oh, you probably went at man.
He's going with me. Okay,
that's not how it works, Mark. 16 works, is it?
Right. Okay. Does it relate to numbers of goals one of our players may have scored once?
Mate, it's an AFC Wimbledon thing. 16.
Okay, this season or historically?
Do we get to ask
any questions? You can if you want. 16.
16.
How many goal scorers we had last season? 16 individual players?
No.
Is it the age of my daughter?
How many times we've... blown a lead? That was last season, probably.
It's tricky, isn't it, Mark? It's a difficult one, isn't it, mate? It's just this throwing these numbers out. It's quite tricky, isn't it?
Well, then what's the answer?
Matt, is it two from the top, three from the middle, one from the bottom?
Come on. This week, two people got my answers, so I think I'm doing quite well.
It's Mark de Bola's number that he wore against...
Oh, of course it is! Yes! The shirt that's been framed.
Yeah, see? When you know the answer, it's easy.
Yeah, isn't it, mate? Isn't it? Don't you find that?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Mr. George Jones, thank you very much for joining us. We've been Same Old Wombles, episode 8.
George, you're hired.
See you all soon. Come on, you done. Might as well be just my world.